from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
And the 1-2 hit in the air, deep left field. Back goes Happ on the track. It's a grand slam home run. Centurio with a grand slam to left. And just like that, Milwaukee leads 4-2.
That was Friday night. That was the big blow. In fact, that was the only blow for the Brewers against Jameson Taillon, but that was enough. Milwaukee, on the basis of that, beat the Cubs 4-2. Jack Centurio with the grand slam, and the rookie has been a nice presence for the Brewers this year. And to talk Brewers, to talk Cubs, to talk National League Central, and all things going on here between Chicago and Milwaukee, let's head on up north. We go on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, from 1250 The Fan, and the host of Wisconsin Sports Daily, Sparky Pfeiffer, joins us. And Sparky, appreciate your time. Thanks for jumping on. And certainly some excitement the other night for the Brewers and their rookie left fielder.
Yeah, I was there. I was sitting there watching that grand slam by Jack Centurio, which is cool. 20 years old. He's got a chance to be probably maybe the best Brewer ever before this whole thing is said and done. Braun obviously was great, but he was cheating. So it takes care of him.
Glad you said it.
Yeah, Fielder was great, obviously, but that didn't last as long as everybody had hoped. He left for more money. So then after that, you go back to, you know, Robin Yount, Paul Molitor. I mean, it's been a while since, you know, you've had a player that I'm not sure they've ever had anybody quite as fast as Churio on the bases. And then you add in his power potential, his ability to hit for average. It's in over 400 in a six-game hitting streak, hitting over 300, I want to say, over the last 30 days. So he's starting to turn it up a little bit like he was in the minors, and this is similar to what he's done in the minors where, you know, he struggled for the first month or so in the minors, and then he would, you know, kind of kick it up a notch and take over, and it looks like maybe that's happened in the major league level now too.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because the Brewers did one of those, you know, we love you so much and believe in you so much, more importantly, that we're going to give you big money before you've even played in the majors. I mean, that was, and I don't have the details in front of me, but it's like 80-something million bucks on a contract extension for a 20-year-old. That's almost unheard of.
Well, I mean, they wanted to make sure he wasn't going to leave as soon as he could. I mean, that's kind of what that was. That was trying to buy up some of those free agent years if he was willing to play ball. And you know, if you go back to Braun and Fielder, in those early days, the deal that Braun signed, that initial deal that Braun signed, they went to Prince Fielder first. And Scott Boras, of course, said no. And Ryan Braun said yes, and they took that initial deal to buy out some free agent here. So this is very Brewers-like getting that deal done with Jack Centurio.
And sadly for Cubs fans, very Brewers-like in the standings right now as they have been in first place in the Central almost throughout. I don't want to say unexpected because maybe it was expected in Milwaukee, but From this end, it certainly looked like, you know, you lose Craig Counsell, you lose Corbin Burns, Williams is hurt at the back end of that bullpen, and yet here they are, 15 games above 500 and comfortably in front in the Central. What would you say has been one or more of the keys that has kept them there?
And if you think about it, like you said, no Corbin Burns, but they also don't have Brandon Woodruff, who's out all year hurt.
Right.
Who they re-signed before the season, gambling that, you know, he'll be able to pitch well, next year for them. So your second pitcher was supposed to be Wade Miley, and then he got hurt early in the season, so you lost him too. And, you know, yeah, y'all got the trader who came to be your manager, which is fine. but he didn't take his guys with him because the owner wouldn't allow it pretty much. Those guys, you know, apparently were going to stay. So Chris Hook, the Brewers pitching coach, is the MVP of this staff. It's it's not even close. My buddy says, you know, he turns water into wine regardless of what pitcher you give him. And he just continues to do it time after time after time again. And now the latest reclamation project they're trying is Dallas Keuchel, who they got for $1, I think it was, in a deal with the Mariners, who was pitching well with their minor league, AAA minor league team. So we'll see what happens. It wasn't a great first outing for Keuchel, so we'll see what happens in outing number two. But, I mean, just think about it. Colin Ray, that guy's a journeyman. Bryce Wilson, they got from the Pirates for cash considerations last January in 23. He's turned into somebody more than just a bullpen guy, but has been in the starting rotation a majority of the year. They get a guy like Tobias Myers, who's an older rookie, and has pitched really well so far this season, and they weren't expecting to have to count on him necessarily to be in that rotation. So, and then that bullpen has been rock solid. No matter who they put out there, seemingly pitches really well. They really haven't had anybody completely blow up on them out in that bullpen. They've been through numerous closers throughout two. Piams was the closer. Then he got dinged up. McGill went in, and McGill pitched so well that they left him in there and left Piams as that eighth inning guy. He's had his struggles, I guess, here maybe in the last month or so. But for the most part, he's been good. Pagaro, Milner, Hobie Milner. I mean, they really have had a really good run of pitching here. And that's despite the fact that they've had injuries. D.L. Hall, who, you know, they got in that trade for Corbin Burns, he's been out and hurt. He's trying to rehab to get back. Joe Ross, who they signed from the Nationals, he's been out and hurt. He's rehabbing. He's trying to get back. Devin Williams is starting to throw, so they'll get their closer back, which means, you know, McGill slides back to eighth. Piam slides back to seventh. That bullpen's just going to get stronger once Devin Williams comes back. Overall, I don't think anybody expected the Brewers to be in first place, like you were talking about. I think Brewers fans were on that same idea with that because starting rotation questions. And then, you know, a lot of young guys in this lineup, and how would they hit, you know, playing their first full season for a lot of these guys. And so far, so good.
Yeah, it's been pretty because the Cubs are dealing with, similarly, a lot of injuries in the bullpen. And you actually got to see the Cubs closer situation yesterday with high wire Hector, or nervous Neeris, whatever you want to call him. But that's what he does. And you as a Brewers fan and as a Brewers, somebody covering the Brewers fandom has not really had to deal with that. And it's funny because you can go back to Hader and then Devin Williams and now with McGill, but it's the ability of the Brewers bullpen to lock down these wins has certainly been something that the Cubs have lacked this season.
Yeah, and then the other thing that they've been doing too is they've been doing this opener thing all year long. Now, Jared Canning is a guy that has opened for Bryce Wilson several times this year, and Wilson, for whatever the reason, seems to pitch better when he gets a start in the second or third inning versus the first, and then is able to go, you know, five or six innings. Canning seems to be fine starting games, so that's been a thing, but now they just lost Canning to a possible elbow injury. They just put him on the IL, so that's going to be another guy they're going to be without, it looks like, for the foreseeable future. But, yeah, I mean, for the most part, Chris Hook has just done amazing things, and I'm sure the trader would love to have him, but he can't.
We're talking to Sparky Pfeiffer, 1250 The Fan from Wisconsin Sports Daily, or the host of Wisconsin Sports Daily, I should say. It's interesting. So the Craig Counsell thing, and I want to ask you about Pat Murphy too, but so I guess two-parter. Number one, and Murphy was there. He was the bench coach. He's got a ton of experience at multiple levels. What has the Pat Murphy effect, I guess you would call it, been? And number two, in terms of Counsell, because he was there for so long, I think he is well-regarded. Obviously, there's some resentment that he left like he did. How do you see, or what would you say are the two answers there? First, Murphy, and then second, Counsell.
Well, I mean, you're learning it about the trader. His offenses suck, don't they?
Yeah,
he's not very good when it comes to offense for that guy. And, you know, you didn't really realize it when he was in Milwaukee because you just thought, well, you know, it's the lineup, it's the talent, lack of whatever. You know, maybe it's not all on him. First year gone, they have the best offense they've ever had when Counsell was here. Pat Murphy's offense this year is better than any Craig Counsell offense he ever had in Milwaukee. And you could argue he might have had better talent than what Pat Murphy is working with. Pat Murphy is working with a bunch of inexperienced kids that are trying to learn how to play the game at the major league level. And the biggest difference is, and again, I'm not going to say this is all Pat Murphy, but I do love Pat Murphy because I think it's an organizational decision. So maybe part of why that offense stunk was David Stearns and Craig Counsell, you know, coming to an agreement that maybe they're not going to run as much and they don't want to play small ball and they don't want to do these things. So Stearns leaves for New York for the Mets. Council obviously goes to Chicago. And then you have Matt Arnold taking over, who came from Tampa Bay and has been with David Stearns his entire time in Milwaukee. Now he gets to call the shots. And it sounds like him and Pat Murphy had a conversation of, if we're going to win, we have to run. We have to do things differently than we've done in the past. We have to be more aggressive. And the word that Pat Murphy has used all year is relentless. We're just going to be relentless on the base pass, relentless at our approach at the plate. And there's not going to be any give up. We're just going to keep attacking inning after inning. And it's been a theme all year. They're running the bases really well. They're not getting thrown out when they run the bases, which is really good. They're doing double steals. They're doing squeeze plays. Everything you can possibly imagine to try and garner a run. Now, sometimes they're over-aggressive, you know, and they look foolish once in a while. But that comes with the territory. They know that. But this style of play has worked for them. And if you look up and down that lineup, pretty much everybody can run and run above average for the most part in that lineup. And they've been playing without Garrett Mitchell, who was supposed to be starting in center field this year for him. Another young guy who should be coming back any day now from his rehab assignment. And you're going to add that, you know, 280, 285 average and 20-plus home run guy who can also run out in the center field and replace a guy that doesn't have the greatest of bats in Blake Perkins, but is really good defensively. This lineup's just going to get better. And you guys really haven't had to see Joey Ortiz outside of a pitch run. He's been dealing with a neck issue since the last series. He comes over in that deal for Corbin Burns, and everybody said in Baltimore, oh, he's got a great glove, but questionable bat. Well, his bat has been more than enough, and he has every reason to be in the All-Star game this year with as well as he's hit and has really taken over that everyday role at third base. So, you know, the biggest difference is this offense is just so much better under Pat Murphy than it was with the Trader. Pitching was good with the Trader for the most part, but the offense is completely different. And now that he's in Chicago, you know, he's taken that offense from last year and looks like he train wrecked it. So not surprised.
I have to know, do you call him the Trader? Is the name Council ever uttered on your program, or is it always only the Trader?
Usually just the Trader, and okay. That's how I refer to him in tweets as well. I was there booing him on Friday night along with everybody else. And then I realized that, you know, it's great to boo him, and I'm all about booing him. But when they introduced Pat Murphy, he got a huge ovation, obviously, in Milwaukee. I get that. But I'm trying to get this whole stand for Pat thing. I think we should stand and give him a standing ovation after we boo the Trader. I think that would make more sense. But, yeah, for me, the arrogance of still living here, after you take that job, that's over the top crazy to me. Like I've encouraged people to boo his family in the grocery store if they see him.
Hey, listen, it's an interesting dynamic. I didn't realize, and you know, maybe shame on me for not paying close enough attention. I mean, I knew there was, you know, hurt feeling certainly on the Brewers side that Council left as he did. I did not expect to have you come on and call him the Trader the whole time. I wasn't expecting it. So it is interesting to note that. But Murphy has done a wonderful job. And I mean, you know, as the bench coach there for many years, he certainly knows the team. He knows everything about the organization and whatever. But he's certainly done a nice job with everything. And you know what? And offensively, Terang at the top of the order has been great. But William Contreras, I don't know if I should be surprised by this or not. I mean, we had his brother here for a number of years, Wilson Contreras. But William Contreras has been amazing.
Again. Trader leaves, and look how things change. Terang last year was awful in his first year up. He leaves, all of a sudden he looks like an offensive player that everybody thought he was going to be coming out of high school, put together this year. Contreras, they were talking to the hitting coaches in a segment on TV this year about, you know, what's changed. They simply went up to Contreras and said, so what happens if you don't swing for a home run every time? How well do you think you could hit? Well, Contreras goes, probably like 330. They're like, 330? They're like, then stop. Enough. Just, you know, play for doubles and singles. Let the home runs come and let's see what happens. And at one point, he was in 320 for the first part of the season and then kind of has gone through a cold spell here a little bit for a couple of weeks. But that's been the major difference. It just kind of changed his mental approach and how he was going at it. And that opened up everything for him. Framing pitches and defense was a big negative on him. That improved greatly last year. He's regressed this year. So if they can help to figure that out and get him back to where, you know, he was last year, that'd be a huge thing. But even with whatever negative he brings defensively, what he provides offensively and what he provides for that clubhouse, just like Willie Adames, what he provides for that clubhouse is unmeasurable.
Well, and we haven't even mentioned Christian Yelich yet, but I don't want to say I thought he was done, but I thought he was You know, as guys age past 30 and you start to see regression, I mean, he was an unbelievable MVP-level player for a number of years there, but I don't want to say a resurgence, but he certainly seems to be more of the old Christian Yelich than what we've seen over the past few years.
I thought he was done. I don't think there's any problem saying you thought he was done. I think everybody thought he was done. You know, he ruins his knee, just destroys it. He's had nagging back spasms and injuries. He's had it again already this year. He ended up on the IL. So he's battling through the back spasms every now and again. But he is far better than I think anybody thought. I mean, you saw glimpses last year that maybe this was coming. But you're like, okay, well, let's see what happens at the beginning of, you know, the following year. And this year, the one thing that's kind of changed is his power is starting to come back. Before, he was kind of that slap hitter at the top of the lineup. You're like, okay, right. Well, he's going to be the leadoff hitter. He's going to be the slap hitter, hit for a decent average, but the power is gone. And at the beginning of this year, the power was back in a big way. And you're like, oh, well, that would be nice. Because for the last several years, you really haven't had anybody in that Brewers lineup that anybody really feared. And without a fear factor somewhere in that lineup makes the rest of the lineup kind of look feeble a little bit. And now you've got guys up and down this lineup that can hurt you.
Yeah, no doubt. And to your earlier point about steals, I did not realize, shame on me for not paying attention, that Yelich has 18 steals. Terang with one yesterday has 28. Yep. Frelick has a lot. I mean, they are running a ton, and it's certainly helping them produce runs.
Yeah, and they're not getting thrown out. I want to say they're like, what, 85% not getting thrown out, 80%, something like that. It's a stupid high number where they're just not getting caught either. And there was a piece on Quinnen Berry, the first base coach, how Pat Murphy said in spring training, you're going to be in charge of the steals. You're in charge of all of it. And every day in the pregame meeting, he gives Berry time to talk about that day's pitcher and how they're going to attack him and how they're going to run off of him and so forth. And they give Quinnen Berry full control of it and full credit for how well their stolen base program has been this year.
Last few minutes with Sparky Pfeiffer from 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee. Today's pitcher, opposing pitcher for the Brewers, Kyle Hendricks, the crafty old veteran who has actually had a bit of a resurgence himself. And you guys throw Freddie Peralta, do I call them the ace of your staff? I would think so, right? Freddie Peralta,
sure.
Certainly among the better pitchers in the league. But a nice matchup and a nice game today, the rubber match of the series.
I mean, see, that's what I mean. He's the ace of the staff. But really, if you put him in L.A. or Philly or wherever, where they have a better pitching staff, he's probably like three, like he used to be,
right,
with Burns and Woodruff. And they're still 15 games over 500, and he's your one. And in the beginning of the year, you know, April, early May, he was looking like an ace. Like, oh, okay, he's improved. This is going to be good. And then eventually he reverted back to Freddie Peralta again, which is fine. He's a good pitcher. I wouldn't say he's a great pitcher, but he's good enough. And Kyle Hendricks, he was awful. When we got one. Yeah, when the trader said, okay, we're done, I was like, man, he must be really bad for the trader to give up on him. And then he came back. Now he's looked good the last couple of times. His curveball, I guess, is finally working for him, which is good for him. I think it'll be a good matchup this afternoon. I don't know if I favor one way or the other. It'd be fun to see what happens. But, yeah, Peralta's done fine. But it's not somebody that you necessarily be scared of if you're facing. There's nobody in the Brewers rotation to be scared of. But what happens is they only get a lot of ground ball outs. They don't walk a lot of guys usually. And they get balls put in play, and their defense is really good. They're very athletic defensively. You talk about the outfield, the speed they have out there. Up the middle with Terang and Adames, I can't imagine there's a better second base shortstop combo defensively than those two. Ortiz, when he's in there, is outstanding at third base. Hoskins holds his own at first base. And Contreras, obviously, has done a pretty good job throwing out runners behind the plate. So defensively, they've played really well this year.
You know, last year, the Cubs and their fans would have argued that the Dansby-Nico combo up the middle was equal or better than that one. But I know this year things have not been as good for the Cubs and have been much better for the Brewers. So,
Dansby Swanson use a bat still when he comes up at bat?
You know, it's been a rough year for Dansby so far. The offense has not been there. He had a really nice year. So that's the thing, right? I mean, there was all the shortstop class last year, right? You had Turner with the Phillies and Bogarts and Dansby and whatever. And Dansby was probably the fourth in terms of how you would have ranked those guys, but he had a really nice year last year, and I think Cubs fans embraced him, and then he's struggled this year. He's had a difficult time offensively, for sure.
Well,
so,
the other thing, too, is with the Brewers, Willie Adames is headed to free agency after this year. You know, the Brewers tried to get him signed to a deal before the year. It didn't work out. He's having a pretty good year, so odds are he's going to leave in free agency, which means then Jordy Ortiz will slide to shortstop, and Terang will be at second base, and then they'll have to figure out third base, whether that's Sal Frelick coming in from the outfield to play third base, like Pat Murphy was talking about prior to the season starting before Garrett Mitchell got hurt, or they have a couple of kids coming up in the minors that could play third base, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. But that shortstop position, you know, you pay a lot of money for, and as you guys found out, you know, you got to play at that level. I blame him for, you know, marrying Mallory Pugh. I think it's kind of been all downhill. I got her jersey. I wear her soccer jersey,
nice.
But it says Pugh on it. It doesn't say Swanson. I would not wear that. No.
I understand. Last thing for you, Sparky. We appreciate you jumping on with us this morning on Hit and Run. Looking at the division down the road, I mean, Brewers 6.5 ahead right now. The Cardinals, Pirates, Reds, Cubs have kind of jockeyed for position throughout the course of the year. It has not been a good few months for the Cubs. It has been a good few months for St. Louis. How do you see this playing out? Who do you fear most? How about that? We put it that way for the Brewers.
Yeah, Cardinals get on their run. After Marmol gets kicked out of a game against the Brewers in Milwaukee, they rally back to win that game, and they've been significantly better since that matchup. Cardinals are always a pain in the butt. I'm not as big as Marmol guy. I don't think he's a great manager necessarily, but you got to give him credit for the run they've been on. The other thing working against the Cardinals, age. They got a lot of old guys, you know. Are they going to stay healthy? Can they still be all playing at a decent level? Goldschmidt struggled forever. Now he's kind of finally turned it around, which is nice for them. Burleson has been a nice little find for them in that lineup and has played well. I think the Cardinals are probably the one team, if you know you're a Brewers fan, that you look at and go, okay, that could be a problem at some point here if the Brewers stumble for any stretch of time and they get hot at the same time. But outside of that, I mean, I don't know if anybody's concerned about the Reds, Pirates, and the Cubs at this point. It's probably Brewers and Cardinals. And even from that perspective, if the Brewers can get the Cardinals to about 10 back here at some point, that's probably done as well.
Yeah, I thought the Cardinals were toast early in the season. I was surprised that they were able to surge as they did. I mean, the run differential is still terrible. So I hate to say it because I thought the Cubs were, and I still think they have a run or two left in them, but they better turn it around quick because I thought this would be a two-horse race between the Brewers and the Cubs.
The problem is your starting pitching is getting better, fine. But how many arms short are you in the bullpen? I mean, you can
like
only
eight?
Trade for so
yeah,
many guys at a deadline.
Right.
You can't trade for a whole bullpen.
And it's been amazing how many injuries they've had and how many different arms they use. And it'll be fun to watch down the line, Sparky. And we appreciate you jumping on with us. But we'll see how things go today with Peralta and Hendricks. Appreciate you.
Now, there's a rumor up in Milwaukee that he's not a traitor, that it might be the highest paid sabotage job in the history of sports.
He's getting the back channel instructions from Pat Murphy somewhere, right?
Marquette Dawson's like, I can't pay you, but they will. But, hey, I'll give you a little side action if you can help us out a little bit.
And with that, we will let you go. Sparky, appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
Have a good day.
You too. Sparky Pfeiffer, 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee, Wisconsin Sports Daily. And there it is, the first time we've heard Craig Counsell referenced as a conspiracy theory for the Brewers. He is here as a foreign agent working for the Brewers. I love that he called him. I mean, to me, it's sports, it's rivalry, it's fun. The fact that he calls him the traitor instead of Craig Counsell or instead of Counsell just cracks me up. When we return, lots more Hit and Run. We've got another hour plus before Cubs baseball at 12:35. We will replay the Garrett Crochet interview from inside the clubhouse yesterday. We'll do that at noon. If you've missed the news today and the trade rumors, we will get that to you next segment. And we'll talk about it more at 11:40. But up next, a hit and run staple, the team of the moment. We'll tell you who that is, and we'll talk about them next here on Hit and Run. It's Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel on 670 The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run, with guest host Mike Esposito.
Here's Alex looking for his first hit today, looking to snap an 0-for-16.
base hit right field. Two runs are going to score. Astros take the lead. The throw to third not in time. It's 7-6. Breggy with a huge two-out, two RBI knock.
It's not a Breggy bomb, but it feels like it.
Adam Ottavino not available. Edwin Diaz suspended.
Called third strike. Ball game over. Josh Hader closes the door on the Astros' biggest comeback of the year. Down 6-1. Astros score the final eight to win it 9-6.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eye.
One of the things you get with the guest hosts is no singing, because I can't, so I won't. We will let Spiegs do the singing. We appreciate his Asia heat of the moment, team of the moment cover version, and we enjoy that. I was playing a little air guitar in here and listening as we listen to Astros highlights. Alex Bregman with an RBI single and in a Worlds Colliding moment, as we were just talking about Brewers closers. Josh Hader closing things out for the Astros. They are our team of the moment after a very cold start. Joe Espada's team, 8-2 over their last 10. They had won 7 in a row before losing Friday night. And then yesterday they come back to win. So the ever dangerous Houston Astros back at 500 now, 41-41. And they are 4.5 games behind Seattle. Over there in the American League West, they have the best run differential in that division. I certainly think they have the best lineup in that division. And also of note with the Astros, Kyle Tucker, all-star, one of the best players in baseball. He has been on the injured list for the last few weeks with a shin contusion. He fouled a ball off of his shin. Justin Verlander, the future Hall of Famer, he has also been on the injured list. So they're doing this without those two guys. Verlander should be back soon. Tucker should be back soon. But they've been getting some great pitching. Hunter Brown has been great lately. Framber Valdez, Ronel Blanco has had a really nice season for them. And in the bullpen, and brings us full circle to the Cubs as we talk about closers and closing out games after a bad start, just like his team, Josh Hader, has settled in, only 2 earned runs over his last 8 outings, and the Astros back, as I said, to within 4.5 games of the Mariners, who lost yesterday. Seattle is 9 over 500, but they're only plus 8 on the run differential. So a team that has a nice record. They've won some games that have been tight, but the Astros 4.5 back, and they're right in the thick of it there in the American League West. And when you look at teams to fear, especially with the way they've been pitching, I think the Houston Astros are our team of the moment and thusly declared here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. It's Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel this week. Spiegs will be back next week. We will listen in to Garrett Crochet's interview with Inside the Clubhouse at the top of the 12 o'clock hour. He is the subject of plenty of trade rumors, and just this morning in USA Today, this from Bob Nightingale, if you missed it earlier, the White Sox quietly engaged in brief contract extension talks with ace Garrett Crochet, but with no optimism towards reaching an agreement. The Sox intend to trade him by the July 30th trade deadline. The White Sox have had 15 teams calling to express interest in Crochet, who is making only $800,000 and is under team control through 2026. The X factor for suitors will be determining just how much Crochet can help them in the pennant stretch and in October. So that certainly made our antenna stand up this morning, and Sox fans have been reacting to that throughout the show. And holding patiently and getting his reaction now is Greg on the South Side joining us on Hit and Run. Hey, Greg, good morning.
Good morning. Of course, you know, I've been home for a while, so that means I got a lot on my mind.
Talk to me, Greg.
This Crochet thing is this is how the White Sox operate. We can't extend you because we're not going to do this with, you know, the money thing, and now we're going to trade you. Most good teams, I mean, except for the Devil Rays, you know, which they're not a major market team, are looking to keep these kind of guys. And I know pitching is volatile. They can get hurt anytime. You're talking about trading Roberts. I mean, these are White Sox fans. I'm a White Sox fan, diehard season ticket holders. If I want to go to Birmingham and watch the Birmingham Barons, I can do that for half the price. For at least one quarter of the price, I can do that. I'm not trying to watch these guys again bring up, you know, go get minor leaguers and we're going to dream about them being good in 5 or 6 years or whatever you're thinking about. I'm tired of the dream. I'm tired of them selling me the dream. Sign this guy. You got all this money coming off the books next year. Sign the guy and be done with it and stop trying to sell us a dream like this. I mean, I don't care about prospects because we already know how that works. We don't know. It's a hit and miss. You can't predict the future on this. Just sign the guys that are up here producing. They're major leaguers. This guy's an all-star, and you're sitting there trying to trade him because you can't sign him because you be cheap on this guy.
Greg, we appreciate your call, and thank you for making those points. And that's literally why I think that it's a certainty that they will trade him. And I am not saying that you're wrong in thinking that you want them to re-sign him, but it's a near certainty that they're going to trade him, in my opinion, because they don't pay pitchers. The last pitchers and our crack research team of Sears and Espo here determined that the only two pitchers in recent memory, well, three if you go back 20 years, but the only ones in recent memory, and how dare I forget John Danks. What about Danks? I can't believe I forgot the five-year $65 million they gave Danks. And then Dallas Keuchel. The Dallas Keuchel that we just talked about last segment, who is now a Brewer, got $55 million from the Sox over three. And Danks was okay. I don't remember how that ended. I don't think it ended very well. I know he was injured.
What about Danks?
Thank you. Chris Ranji somewhere saluting. And Dallas Keuchel was bad. He had a good year, and then he had bad years. So one thing we know about the Reinsdorf White Sox over 42 years or whatever it is, 44 years that he's owned the team, is they don't pay starting pitcher. The third guy, by the way, would be Jose Contreras. But at the time, if you think about it, it wasn't a ton of years and it wasn't a ton of money. It was a big money contract. I want to say it was like 3 and like 40 or something like that. I don't have it in front of me, but you get my gist. It was not like they were paying him $200 million, right? So that is exactly why I think that Crochet will be dealt. And listen, the counterpoint is that is right. You're in a rebuild, or you're certainly, if you're not in a full-blown rebuild, you should be, because you're the worst team in baseball right now. And Crochet is going to net you a ton. Let's sneak in another call here before we break. It is our old buddy Ron on the South Side here on Hit and Run. Hey, Ron, good morning.
Look here, always good hearing you, Mike. You have to trade him. First of all, the team is not going to even, I'm not talking about being good. This team is not going to be competitive for a couple of years. So if you keep him, what are you getting? Same thing with Luis Robert. I had based that on going to the season, kind of projecting when the Sox would be good. Mike, they have no position players. And I know everybody keeps talking about these young arms, but the only way they're going to get some position players from their minor league system is from trading. They need to be talking to the Baltimore Orioles, who have the best position players in the minor league system. But yeah, it's just no use keeping his value, Mike, is probably the highest it's ever going to be. It's always the risk of injury. He hasn't pitched this much, but yeah, he has to go. I'm glad Luis Robert is coming around. You have to trade both of them. Thanks, Mike. Always a All pleasure. Right.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the call, and thank you for that very effective counterpoint. I agree, and listen, you look at the Major League White Sox roster. Who on this team is going to be in that position the next time the White Sox are contending in the Central? Because it's probably not going to be next year. You could almost guarantee that just based on where this rebuild is headed. And if you don't trade Robert, he is the only guy. Andrew Vaughn, maybe, but he has been underwhelming. He started to come on late, of late. Paul DeJong will be gone at the deadline, most likely. Maybe Corey Lee as a catcher. Andrew Benintendi, by the way, according to the same article, the Sox are shopping Andrew Benintendi. I'm sure there are a lot of phone calls being made there. And I kid, but obviously that's not going to go anywhere, at least not right now. I agree with Ron. You're in a rebuild. You are the worst team in baseball, and you need young star players. However you get them, you need them. And we're starting to see some of that for the Sox on the pitching front. We're not seeing it on the offensive front. Corey Lee has been okay. Lenin Sosa has been okay. Andrew Vaughn has been okay. And, you know, the Eloy Moncada Robert thing, as much logical sense as it made at the time, has not worked. So, to me, and we'll listen, Garrett Crochet, he's all over the place today. He is pitching today. Garrett Crochet is pitching against Colorado as the Sox go for the sweep. And you also have the Inside the Clubhouse interview from yesterday, which we're going to bring back and play for you at 12, because he talks about the trade rumors with Bruce and David. He talks about this, and this was before this report came out. But we will get to that at noon. Actually, yes, let's take one more caller, Sean, before we head to break. David is in Peru and wants to talk Sox and trades here on Hit and Run. Hey, David.
Hey, gang. I love listening to you, so job well done.
Thank you.
And you try to respect all your callers, and I appreciate it. If the White Sox could get Crochet and Robert in a trade, we'd be all excited. There is no reasonable expectation they'll get back the full value of what they're worth. They can wait till this fall. Cease trade, they didn't get their top prospects. Now, Dylan is having problems now. His ERA has ballooned. But they didn't. If they're going to trade them, get their number one prospects, or tell them to go pick cotton or whatever they want to do.
All right, David, we appreciate the call. I will say this, with the Cease trade, they did get, I mean, Drew Thorpe, they got a bunch of prospects. Drew Thorpe, who we've seen, was one of them. The other thing that you have to consider too, David, and listen, Crochet makes no money, so I understand that point of it. But the haul, the what you're getting back versus what you're sending away for a team that has 24 wins here on June 30th, and you're looking for future production and future stardom, really. I mean, that's if you're trading Garrett Crochet at this deadline to the highest bidder, and there's going to be a lot of bidders, you are looking for future stardom out of the guys that you get back. And, you know, not all of them will be future stars, but you are certainly trying to hit a home run with this trade. That is going to be, if moved, the hottest commodity on the trade market, Garrett Crochet. According to Bob Nightingale, it certainly seems like that is happening. I'm less sure that they would move Luis Robert. He is the one marketable player that you have on this roster that you can put, that you would consider the face of the franchise, everyday star player. You could argue that the Sox have one and the Cubs right now don't. We need to take a timeout. When we return, we will talk to that Cubs offense and the lack of that star player, or more accurately, the lack of production from those star players. And then, as mentioned, Garrett Crochet on Inside the Clubhouse will bring that one back at noon for you. We got Cubs baseball coming your way with the pregame at 12:35. All of that here on The Score. This is Mike Esposito. I'm in for Matt Spiegel. It's Hit and Run every Sunday morning right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
And so now I wonder, do the Cubs actually become sellers?
I still don't see it, Kevin. We're a month away, as you said. It's not even July yet, and they have the exact same record that they had last year at this time. So last year, what happened? They won 10 of 12 at one point in July, became buyers, acquired Jamer Candelario. This year, could they trade Cody Bellinger if all things go badly? Yeah, they could do that, but They've had rotation injuries. They've had bullpen injuries. They've got 19 one-run losses, the most in the majors. Their offense has been a disappointment. We've seen any number of teams turn around in the last couple of weeks or so. The Astros, the Mets, the Red Sox, the Cardinals. The Cubs are thinking maybe they're next.
Well, we'll find out. Ken, we appreciate it. We'll hear from you a little bit later in the show. Plenty more trade talk to come.
That's Ken Rosenthal on Fox. One of the most plugged-in MLB reporters in the country. And that was his take on the Cubs and whether or not they become sellers. So Ken Rosenthal right there basically saying the Cubs are a no. Now, that could change, and we heard Jed Hoyer earlier. We played you some of the Hoyer sound from this week where he said that, you know, now is the time. It's put up or shut up if you're the Cubs. If you're that offense, you need to right the ship, so to speak, as you are 6 games under .500 entering play today at 39-45, 10.5 games behind the Milwaukee Brewers in the Central Division. And really, the Brewers kind of sort of running away with the division. Still plenty of baseball to be played, but right now there are no close races in the National League. The Phillies are 7 ahead of Atlanta. The Brewers are 6.5 ahead of St. Louis. And the Dodgers are 7.5 ahead of San Diego. So can the Cubs or anyone make it a race in the National League Central for the Cubs to do that? And you heard Ken Rosenthal refer to this during his answer there on the Fox programming that we played from entering the segment. The Cubs are going to have to pull a 2023. Much like they did last year, if you recall, in early June, the Cubs were out in San Francisco after losing that series. They were 10 games under .500. I want to say it was June 7th or 8th of last year. And they went on a several-month heater in which they turned themselves into not only not a seller at the deadline, but a buyer. And you heard Ken reference the Jamer Candelario thing, which worked out, and then they had a great August, and they were a playoff team. They choked away the playoff berth at the end of the season because they couldn't hold leads again. But this was a team that was 10 under, and then all of a sudden was a buyer, and then all of a sudden was a, you know, solidly a wild card team, and then it was a team that all of a sudden couldn't hold the lead and got passed in September by the Marlins and by the eventual National League champion, Arizona Diamondbacks. So from Ken's reporting, he's telling you that the Cubs feel that they are still in this, that they have the talent. They've had all these various things go wrong, including the one-run games, which we mentioned earlier this season. If you can, or earlier this program, I should say, if you convert half of those one-run games this season from losses to wins, the Cubs would be right up there with the Brewers. Now, you can't do that. That's not how it works. Having a good bullpen is a big part of that. The Cubs have not had that all season. Even when healthy, Adbert Alzolay blew, I want to say, 5 saves in April before he got hurt. It was a lot. And those are games they should have won. You had a game on Monday, and Sean, I can't believe it's taken us almost 3 hours to mention the walk-off walk, but it won for the Cubs pantheon. Monday night in San Francisco, the Cubs enter the ninth with a 4-2 lead, and they lose 5-4 on something that you don't see every day. And Drew Smyly was the pitcher of the moment there, the pitcher of record, and the guy that gave up that walk-off walk. I can't recall a walk-off walk in recent vintage, but the Cubs managed to give up 3 runs, including the walk-off walk, to lose that game Monday in San Francisco. I'm sure that was the game when a lot of Cubs fans threw their proverbial TVs off the balconies or cashed in their chips on the season.
Bases loaded, 2 down, bottom of the ninth inning. And the 3-1 pitch, ball 4, the Cubs have lost the ball game. The Giants rally for 3 in the ninth inning, and they have beaten the Cubs by a score of 5-4.
Pat Hughes with the lowlights right here on the Cubs Radio Network and on 670 The Score. The intentional walk to set up the walk-off walk You can't draw it up any worse than that, folks. That was a bad one. That was a disheartening one because you most likely stayed up till almost midnight to watch that ending. And Sean is nodding his head vigorously, as am I, because we both were there suffering along with you and Cubs fans nationwide. But as we just heard from Ken Rosenthal, the Cubs internally think that they are still in this. They are 6 under .500. They are 10.5 back, but they've got a month. You basically heard Jed say this in the sound we played. They've got a month to right the ship. If you have a nice month, let's say you play a 15-10, 16-10, however many games they have, you're right back at .500. You know that'll put you in the wild card race. You know that'll keep you squarely in the divisional race. They would not sell. They would probably maybe small buy or maybe big buy. Who the heck knows, right? But have a 10-15 month, and then you're 11 under .500, and then I'm going to guess you're selling, and then you would be one of the biggest disappointments, certainly, in baseball this year if that were to happen. But the flip side is also still possible. Hour three complete here on Hit and Run. Hour four coming up next as we lead you up to Cubs baseball. We will start it with a great interview with the biggest trade chip at the deadline, Garrett Crochet. And Bob Nightingale already out this morning saying that Crochet is likely to be traded by the White Sox. Garrett was on with Inside the Clubhouse yesterday with Bruce and David. We will listen to that next, as we lead you into Cubs Brewers. It's Hit and Run. Espo in for Spiegs here on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
And the 1-2 hit in the air, deep left field. Back goes Hap on the track. It's a grand slam home run. Jack Centurio with a grand slam to left. And just like that, Milwaukee leads 4-2.
That was Friday night. That was the big blow. In fact, that was the only blow for the Brewers against Jameson Taillon, but that was enough. Milwaukee, on the basis of that, beat the Cubs 4-2. Jack Centurio with the grand slam, and the rookie has been a nice presence for the Brewers this year. And to talk Brewers, to talk Cubs, to talk National League Central and all things going on here between Chicago and Milwaukee, let's head on up north. We go on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, from 1250 The Fan and the host of Wisconsin Sports Daily, Sparky Pfeiffer joins us. And Sparky, appreciate your time. Thanks for jumping on. And certainly some excitement the other night for the Brewers and their rookie left fielder.
Yeah, I was there. I was sitting there watching that grand slam by Jack Centurio, which is cool. 20 years old. He's got a chance to be probably maybe the best Brewer ever before this whole thing is said and done. Braun obviously was great, but he was cheating. So it takes care of him.
Glad you said it.
Yeah, Fielder was great, obviously, but that didn't last as long as everybody had hoped. He left for more money. So then after that, you go back to, Robin Yount, Paul Molitor. I mean, it's been a while since, you've had a player that I'm not sure they've ever had anybody quite as fast as Churio on the bases. And then you add in his power potential, his ability to hit for average. It's hitting over 400 on a six-game hitting streak, hitting over 300, I want to say, over the last 30 days. So he's starting to turn it up a little bit like he was in the minors, and this is similar to what he's done in the minors where, he struggles for the first month or so in the minors, and then he would, kind of kick it up a notch and take over. And it looks like maybe that's happened in the major league level now, too.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because the Brewers did one of those, we love you so much and believe in you so much, more importantly, that we're going to give you big money before you've even played in the majors. I mean, that was, and I don't have the details in front of me, but it's like 80-something million bucks on a contract extension for a 20-year-old. That's almost unheard of.
Well, I mean, they wanted to make sure he wasn't going to leave as soon as he could. I mean, that's kind of what that was. That was trying to buy up some of those free agent years if he was willing to play ball. And you know, if you go back to Braun and Fielder in those early days, the deal that Braun signed, that initial deal that Braun signed, they went to Prince Fielder first. And Scott Boras, of course, said no. And Ryan Braun said yes. And they took that initial deal to buy out some free agent years. So this is very Brewers-like. Getting that deal done with Jackson Chourio.
And sadly for Cubs fans, very Brewers-like in the standings right now as they have been in first place in the Central almost throughout. I don't want to say unexpected because maybe it was expected in Milwaukee, but from this end, it certainly looked like, you know, you lose Craig Counsell, you lose Corbin Burns, Williams is hurt at the back end of that bullpen. And yet, here they are, 15 games above 500 and comfortably in front in the Central. What would you say has been one or more of the keys that has kept them there?
And if you think about it, like you said, no Corbin Burns, but they also don't have Brandon Woodruff, who's out all year hurt.
Right.
Who they re-signed before the season, gambling that you know, he'll be able to pitch well next year for them. So your second pitcher was supposed to be Wade Miley, and then he got hurt early in the season, so you lost him too. And, you know, yeah, y'all got the trader who came to be your manager, which is fine. but he didn't take his guys with him because the owner wouldn't allow it pretty much. Those guys, you know, apparently were going to stay. So Chris Hook, the Brewers pitching coach, is the MVP of this staff. It's not even close. My buddy says, you know, he turns water into wine regardless of what pitcher you give him. And he just continues to do it time after time after time again. Now, the latest reclamation project they're trying is Dallas Keuchel, who they got for $1, I think it was, in a deal with the Mariners, who is pitching well at their minor league, AAA minor league team. So we'll see what happens. It wasn't a great first outing for Keuchel, so we'll see what happens in outing number two. But, I mean, just think about it. Colin Ray, that guy's a journeyman. Bryce Wilson, they got from the Pirates for cash considerations last January and 23. He's turned into somebody more than just a bullpen guy, but has been in the starting rotation a majority of the year. They get a guy like Tobias Myers, who's an older rookie, and has pitched really well so far this season, and they weren't expecting to have to count on him necessarily to be in that rotation. So, and then that bullpen has been rock solid. No matter who they put out there, seemingly pitches really well. They really haven't had anybody completely blow up on them out in that bullpen. They've been through numerous closers throughout two. Piams was the closer. Then he got dinged up. McGill went in, and McGill pitched so well that they left him in there and left Piams as that eighth inning guy. He's had his struggles, I guess, here maybe in the last month or so. But for the most part, he's been good. Pagero, Milner, Hobie Milner. I mean, they really have had a really good run of pitching here. And that's despite the fact that they've had injuries. D.L. Hall, who, you know, they got in that trade for Corbin Burns, he's been out and hurt. He's trying to rehab to get back. Joe Ross, who they signed from the Nationals, he's been out and hurt. He's rehabbing. He's trying to get back. Devin Williams is starting to throw, so they'll get their closer back, which means, you know, McGill slides back to eighth, Piam slides back to seventh. That bullpen's just going to get stronger once Devin Williams comes back. So overall, I don't think anybody expected the Brewers to be in first place, like you were talking about. I think Brewers fans were on that same idea with that because starting rotation questions. And then, you know, a lot of young guys in this lineup, and how would they hit, you know, playing their first full season for a lot of these guys, and so far, so good.
Yeah, it's been pretty because the Cubs are dealing with, similarly, a lot of injuries in the bullpen, and you actually got to see the Cubs closer situation yesterday with high-wire Hector, or nervous Nearest, whatever you want to call him, but that's what he does, and you as a Brewers fan and as a Brewers, somebody covering the Brewers fandom has not really had to deal with that, and it's funny because you can go back to Hader and then Devin Williams and now with McGill, but it's the ability of the Brewers bullpen to lock down these wins has certainly been something that the Cubs have lacked this season.
Yeah, and then the other thing that they've been doing too is they've been doing this opener thing all year long. Now, Jared Canning is a guy that has opened for Bryce Wilson several times this year, and Wilson, for whatever the reason, seems to pitch better when he gets a start in the second or third inning versus the first, and then is able to go, you know, five or six innings. Canning seems to be fine starting games, so that's been a thing, but now they just lost Canning to a possible elbow injury. They just put him on the IL, so that's going to be another guy they're going to be without, it looks like, for the foreseeable future. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, Chris Hook has just done amazing things, and I'm sure the trader would love to have him, but he can't.
We're talking to Sparky Pfeiffer, 1250 The Fan from Wisconsin Sports Daily, or the host of Wisconsin Sports Daily, I should say. It's interesting. So the Craig Council thing, and I want to ask you about Pat Murphy too, but so I guess two-parter. Number one, and Murphy was there. He was the bench coach. He's got a ton of experience at multiple levels. What has the Pat Murphy effect, I guess you would call it, been? And number two, in terms of Council, because he was there for so long, I think he is well regarded. Obviously, there's some resentment that he left like he did. How do you see, or what would you say are the two answers there? First, Murphy, and then second, Council.
Well, I mean, you're learning it about the trader. His offenses suck, don't they?
Yeah,
he's not very good when it comes to offense for that guy. And, you know, you didn't really realize it when he was in Milwaukee because you just thought, well, you know, it's the lineup, it's the talent, lack of whatever. You know, maybe it's not all on him. First year gone, they have the best offense they've ever had when Council was here. Pat Murphy's offense this year is better than any Craig Council offense he ever had in Milwaukee. And you could argue he might have had better talent than what Pat Murphy is working with. Pat Murphy is working with a bunch of inexperienced kids that are trying to learn how to play the game at the major league level. And the biggest difference is, and again, I'm not going to say this is all Pat Murphy, but I do love Pat Murphy because I think it's an organizational decision. So maybe part of why that offense stunk was David Stearns and Craig Council, you know, coming to an agreement that maybe they're not going to run as much and they don't want to play small ball and they don't want to do these things. So Stearns leaves for New York for the Mets. Council obviously goes to Chicago. And then you have Matt Arnold taking over, who came from Tampa Bay and has been with David Stearns his entire time in Milwaukee. Now he gets to call the shots. And it sounds like him and Pat Murphy had a conversation of, if we're going to win, we have to run. We have to do things differently than we've done in the past. We have to be more aggressive. And the word that Pat Murphy has used all year is relentless. We're just going to be relentless on the base pass, relentless at our approach at the plate. And there's not going to be any give up. We're just going to keep attacking inning after inning. And it's been a theme all year. They're running the bases really well. They're not getting thrown out when they run the bases, which is really good. They're doing double steals. They're doing squeeze plays. Everything you can possibly imagine to try and garner a run. Now, sometimes they're over aggressive, you know, and they look foolish once in a while, but that comes with the territory. They know that. But this style of play has worked for them. And if you look up and down that lineup, pretty much everybody can run and run above average for the most part in that lineup. And they've been playing without Garrett Mitchell, who was supposed to be starting in center field this year for him. Another young guy who should be coming back any day now from his rehab assignment. And you're going to add that, you know, 280, 285 average and 20 plus home run guy who can also run out in the center field and replace a guy that doesn't have the grace of bats and Blake Perkins, but is really good defensively. This lineup's just going to get better. And you guys really haven't had to see Joey Ortiz outside of a pitch run. He's been dealing with a neck issue since the last series. He comes over in that deal for Corbin Burns, and everybody said in Baltimore, oh, he's got a great glove, but questionable bat. Well, his bat has been more than enough, and he has every reason to be in the All-Star game this year with as well as he's hit and has really taken over that everyday role at third base. So, you know, the biggest difference is this offense is just so much better under Pat Murphy than it was with the Trader. Pitching was good with the Trader for the most part, but the offense is completely different. And now that he's in Chicago, you know, he's taken that offense from last year and looks like he train wrecked it. So not surprised.
I have to know, do you call him the Trader? Is the name Council ever uttered on your program, or is it always only the Trader?
Usually just the Trader, and okay. That's how I refer to him in tweets as well. I was there booing him on Friday night along with everybody else. And then I realized that, you know, it's great to boo him, and I'm all about booing him. But when they introduced Pat Murphy, he got a huge ovation, obviously, in Milwaukee. I get that. But I'm trying to get this whole stand for Pat thing. I think we should stand and give him a standing ovation after we boo the Trader. I think that would make more sense. But, yeah, for me, the arrogance of still living here, after you take that job, that's over the top crazy to me. Like I've encouraged people to boo his family in the grocery store if they see him.
Hey, listen, it's an interesting dynamic. I didn't realize, and you know, maybe shame on me for not paying close enough attention. I mean, I knew there was, you know, hurt feeling certainly on the Brewers side that Council left as he did. I did not expect to have you come on and call him the Trader the whole time. I wasn't expecting it. So it is interesting to note that. But Murphy has done a wonderful job. And I mean, you know, as the bench coach there for many years, he certainly knows the team. He knows everything about the organization and whatever. But he's certainly done a nice job with everything. And you know what? And offensively, Terang at the top of the order has been great. But William Contreras, I don't know if I should be surprised by this or not. I mean, we had his brother here for a number of years, Wilson Contreras. But William Contreras has been amazing.
Again, Trader leaves, and look how things change. Terang last year was awful in his first year up. He leaves, all of a sudden he looks like an offensive player that everybody thought he was going to be coming out of high school, put together this year. Contreras, they were talking to the hitting coaches in a segment on TV this year about, you know, what's changed. They simply went up to Contreras and said, so what happens if you don't swing for a home run every time? How well do you think you could hit? William Contreras goes, probably like 330. They're like, 330? They're like, then stop. Enough. Just, you know, play for doubles and singles. Let the home runs come, and let's see what happens. And at one point, he was in 320 for the first part of the season, and then kind of has gone through a cold spell here a little bit for a couple of weeks. But that's been the major difference. It just kind of changed his mental approach and how he was going at it, and that opened up everything for him. Framing pitches and defense was a big negative on him. That improved greatly last year. He's regressed this year. So if they can help to figure that out and get him back to where, you know, he was last year, that'd be a huge thing. But even with whatever negative he brings defensively, what he provides offensively and what he provides for that clubhouse, just like Willy Adames, what he provides for that clubhouse is unmeasurable.
Well, and we haven't even mentioned Christian Yelich yet, but I don't want to say I thought he was done, but I thought he was, you know, as guys age past 30 and you start to see regression. I mean, he was an unbelievable MVP level player for a number of years there, but I don't want to say a resurgence, but he certainly seems to be more of the old Christian Yelich than what we've seen over the past few years.
I thought he was done. I don't think there's any problem saying you thought he was done. I think everybody thought he was done. You know, he ruins his knee, just destroys it. He's had nagging back spasms and injuries. He's had it again already this year. He ended up on the IL. So he's battling through the back spasms every now and again. But he is far better than I think anybody thought. I mean, you saw glimpses last year that maybe this was coming. But you're like, okay, well, let's see what happens at the beginning of, you know, the following year. And this year, the one thing that's kind of changed is his power is starting to come back. Before, he was kind of that slap hitter at the top of the lineup. You're like, okay, right. Well, he's going to be the leadoff hitter. He's going to be the slap hitter, hit for a decent average, but the power is gone. And at the beginning of this year, the power was back in a big way. And you're like, oh, well, that would be nice. Because for the last several years, you really haven't had anybody in that Brewers lineup that anybody really feared. And without a fear factor somewhere in that lineup makes the rest of the lineup kind of look feeble a little bit. And now you've got guys up and down this lineup that can hurt you.
Yeah, no doubt. And to your earlier point about steals, I did not realize, shame on me for not paying attention, that Yelich has 18 steals. Terang, with one yesterday, has 28. Yep. Frelick has a lot. I mean, they are running a ton, and it is certainly helping them produce runs.
Yeah, and they're not getting thrown out. I want to say they're like, what, 85% not getting thrown out, 80%, something like that. It's a stupid high number where they're just not getting caught either. And there was a piece on Quinnen Berry, the first base coach, how Pat Murphy said in spring training, you're going to be in charge of the steals. You're in charge of all of it. And every day in the pregame meeting, he gives Berry time to talk about that day's pitcher and how they're going to attack him and how they're going to run off of him and so forth. And they give Quinnen Berry full control of it and full credit for how well their stolen base program has been this year.
Last few minutes with Sparky Pfeiffer from 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee. Today's pitcher, opposing pitcher for the Brewers, Kyle Hendricks, the crafty old veteran who has actually had a bit of a resurgence himself. And you guys throw Freddie Peralta, do I call them the ace of your staff? I would think so, right? Freddie Peralta, sure. Certainly among the better pitchers in the league. But a nice matchup and a nice game today, the rubber match of the series.
I mean, see, that's what I mean. He's the ace of the staff. But really, if you put him in L.A. or Philly or wherever, where they have a better pitching staff, he's probably like three, like he used to be,
right,
with Burns and Woodruff. And they're still 15 games over 500, and he's your one. And in the beginning of the year, you know, April, early May, he was looking like an ace. Like, oh, okay, he's improved. This is going to be good. And then eventually he reverted back to Freddie Peralta again, which is fine. He's a good pitcher. I wouldn't say he's a great pitcher, but he's good enough. And Kyle Hendricks, He was awful. Like when Council or Trader, sorry. So yeah, you got me there.
See, we got one.
Yeah, when the Trader said, "Okay, we're done," I was like, "Man, he must be really bad for the Trader to give up on him." And then he came back. Now he's looked good the last couple of times. His curveball, I guess, is finally working for him, which is good for him. I think it'll be a good matchup this afternoon. I don't know if I favor one way or the other. It'd be fun to see what happens, but. Yeah, Peralta's done fine, but it's not somebody that you necessarily be scared of if you're facing. There's nobody in the Brewers rotation to be scared of. But what happens is they only get a lot of ground ball outs. They don't walk a lot of guys usually, and they get balls put in play, and their defense is really good. They're very athletic defensively. You're talking about the outfield, the speed they have out there. Up the middle with Terang and Adames, I can't imagine there's a better second base shortstop combo defensively than those two. Ortiz, when he's in there, is outstanding at third base. Hoskins holds his own at first base. And Contreras, obviously, has done a pretty good job throwing out runners behind the plate. So defensively, they've played really well this year.
You know, last year the Cubs and their fans would have argued that the Dansby-Nico combo up the middle was equal or better than that one. But I know this year things have not been as good for the Cubs and have been much better for the Brewers. So,
Dansby Swanson use a bat still when he comes up said that.
You know, it's been a rough year for Dansby so far. The offense has not been there. He had a really nice year. So that's the thing, right? I mean, there was all the shortstop class last year, right? You had Turner with the Phillies and Bogarts and Dansby and whatever. And Dansby was probably the fourth in terms of how you would have ranked those guys, but he had a really nice year last year, and I think Cubs fans embraced him. And then he's struggled this year. He's had a difficult time offensively for sure.
Well, the other thing too is with the Brewers, Willy Adames has headed to free agency after this year. You know, the Brewers tried to get him signed to a deal before the year. It didn't work out. He's having a pretty good year, so odds are he's going to leave in free agency, which means then Jordy Ortiz will slide to shortstop, and Terang will be at second base, and then they'll have to figure out third base, whether that's Sal Frelick coming in from the outfield to play third base, like Pat Murphy was talking about prior to the season starting before Garrett Mitchell got hurt, or they have a couple of kids coming up in the minors that could play third base. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But that shortstop position, you know, you pay a lot of money for, and as you guys found out, you know, you got to play at that level. I blame him for, marrying Mallory Pugh. I think it's kind of been all downhill. I got her jersey. I wear her soccer jersey.
Nice.
But it says Pugh on it. It doesn't say Swanson. I would not wear that. No.
I understand. Last thing for you, Sparky, and we appreciate you jumping on with us this morning on Hit and Run. Looking at the division down the road, I mean, Brewers 6.5 ahead right now. The Cardinals, Pirates, Reds, Cubs have kind of jockeyed for position throughout the course of the year. It has not been a good few months for the Cubs. It has been a good few months for St. Louis. How do you see this playing out? Who do you fear most? How about that? We put it that way for the Brewers.
Yeah, Cardinals get on their run. After Marmol gets kicked out of a game against the Brewers in Milwaukee, they rally back to win that game, and they've been significantly better since that matchup. Cardinals are always a pain in the butt. I'm not the biggest Marmol guy. I don't think he's a great manager necessarily, but you got to give him credit for the run they've been on. The other thing working against the Cardinals, age. They got a lot of old guys, you know. Are they going to stay healthy? Can they still be all playing at a decent level? Goldschmidt struggled forever. Now he's kind of finally turned it around, which is nice for them. Burleson has been a nice little find for them in that lineup and has played well. I think the Cardinals are probably the one team, if, you know, you're a Brewers fan, that you look at and go, okay, that could be a problem at some point here if the Brewers stumble for any stretch of time and they get hot at the same time. But outside of that, I mean, I don't know if anybody's concerned about the Reds, Pirates, and the Cubs at this point. It's probably Brewers and Cardinals. And even from that perspective, if the Brewers can get the Cardinals to about 10 back here at some point, that's probably done as well.
Yeah, I thought the Cardinals were toast early in the season. I was surprised that they were able to surge as they did. I mean, the run differential is still terrible. So I hate to say it because I thought the Cubs were, and I still think they have a run or two left in them, but they better turn it around quick because I thought this would be a two-horse race between the Brewers and the Cubs.
The problem is your starting pitching is getting better, fine. But how many arms short are you in the bullpen? I mean, you can
like
only
eight?
Trade for so
yeah,
many guys at a deadline.
Right.
You can't trade for a whole bullpen.
And it's been amazing how many injuries they've had and how many different arms they use. And it'll be fun to watch down the line, Sparky. And we appreciate you jumping on with us. But we'll see how things go today with Peralta and Hendricks. Appreciate you.
Now, there's a rumor up in Milwaukee that he's not a traitor, that it might be the highest paid sabotage job in the history of sports.
He's getting the back channel instructions from Pat Murphy somewhere, right?
Marquette Nass is like, I can't pay you, but they will. But hey, I'll give you a little side action if you can help us out a little bit.
And with that, we will let you go. Sparky, appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
Have a good day.
You too. Sparky Pfeiffer, 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee, Wisconsin Sports Daily. And there it is. The first time we've heard Craig Counsell referenced as a conspiracy theory for the Brewers. He is here as a foreign agent working for the Brewers. I love that he called him. To me, it's sports, it's rivalry, it's fun. The fact that he calls him the traitor instead of Craig Counsell or instead of Counsell just cracks me up. When we return, lots more Hit and Run. We've got another hour plus before Cubs baseball at 12:35. We will replay the Garrett Crochet interview from inside the clubhouse yesterday. We'll do that at noon. If you've missed the news today and the trade rumors, we will get that to you next segment. And we'll talk about it more at 11:40. But up next, a hit and run staple, the team of the moment. We'll tell you who that is, and we'll talk about him next here on Hit and Run. It's Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel on 670 The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run, with guest host Mike Esposito.
Here's Alex looking for his first hit today, looking to snap an 0-for-16.
Base hit right field. Two runs are going to score. Astros take the lead. The throw to third, not in time. It's 7-6. Breggy with a huge two-out, two RBI knock.
It's not a Breggy bomb, but it feels like it.
Adam Ottavino not available. Edwin Diaz suspended.
Called third strike. Ball game over. Josh Hader closes the door on the Astros' biggest comeback of the year. Down 6-1, Astros score the final eight to win it 9-6.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
One of the things you get with the guest hosts is no singing. Because I can't, so I won't. We will let Spiegs do the singing. We appreciate his Asia Heat of the Moment, Team of the Moment cover version. And we enjoy that. I was playing a little air guitar in here and listening as we listen to Astros highlights. Alex Bregman with an RBI single and in a Worlds Colliding moment as we were just talking about Brewers closers. Josh Hader closing things out. For the Astros, they are our team of the moment after a very cold start. Joe Espada's team, 8-2 over their last 10. They had won 7 in a row before losing Friday night. And then yesterday they come back to win. So the ever dangerous Houston Astros, back at 500 now, 41-41. And they are 4.5 games behind Seattle. Over there in the American League West, they have the best run differential in that division. I certainly think they have the best lineup in that division. And also of note with the Astros, Kyle Tucker, all-star, one of the best players in baseball. He has been on the injured list for the last few weeks with a shin contusion. He fouled a ball off of his shin. Justin Verlander, the future Hall of Famer, he has also been on the injured list. So they're doing this without those two guys. Verlander should be back soon. Tucker should be back soon. But they've been getting some great pitching. Hunter Brown has been great lately. Framber Valdez, Ronel Blanco has had a really nice season for them. And in the bullpen, and brings us full circle to the Cubs as we talk about closers and closing out games after a bad start, just like his team, Josh Hader, has settled in, only 2 earned runs over his last 8 outings, and the Astros back, as I said, to within 4.5 games of the Mariners, who lost yesterday. Seattle is 9 over .500, but they're only +8 on the run differential. So a team that has a nice record. They've won some games that have been tight, but the Astros 4.5 back, and they're right in the thick of it there in the American League West. And when you look at teams to fear, especially with the way they've been pitching, I think the Houston Astros are our team of the moment and thusly declared here on Hit and Run on 670. The Score, it's Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel this week. Spiegs will be back next week. We will listen in to Garrett Crochet's interview with Inside the Clubhouse at the top of the 12 o'clock hour. He is the subject of plenty of trade rumors, and just this morning in USA Today, this from Bob Nightingale, if you missed it earlier, the White Sox quietly engaged in brief contract extension talks with ace Garrett Crochet, but with no optimism towards reaching an agreement. The Sox intend to trade him by the July 30th trade deadline. The White Sox have had 15 teams calling to express interest in Crochet, who is making only $800,000 and is under team control through 2026. The X factor for suitors will be determining just how much Crochet can help them in the pennant stretch and in October. So that certainly made our antenna stand up this morning, and Sox fans have been reacting to that throughout the show. And holding patiently and getting his reaction now is Greg on the South Side joining us on Hit and Run. Hey, Greg, good morning.
Good morning. Of course, you know, I've been holding for a while, so that means I got a lot on my mind.
Talk to me, Greg.
This Crochet thing is this is how the White Sox operate. We can't extend you because we're not going to do this with, you know, the money thing, and now we're going to trade you. Most good teams, I mean, except for the Devil Rays, you know, which they're not a major market team, are looking to keep these kind of guys. And I know pitching is volatile. They can get hurt anytime. You're talking about trading Roberts. I mean, these are White Sox fans. I'm a White Sox fan, diehard season ticket holders. If I want to go to Birmingham and watch the Birmingham Barons, I can do that for half the price. For at least one quarter of the price, I can do that. I'm not trying to watch these guys again bring up, you know, go get minor leaguers and we're going to dream about them being good in 5 or 6 years or whatever you're thinking about. I'm tired of the dream. I'm tired of them selling me the dream. Sign this guy. You got all this money coming off the books next year. Sign the guy and be done with it and stop trying to sell us a dream like this. I mean, I don't care about prospects because we already know how that works. We don't know. It's a hit and miss. You can't predict the future on this. Just sign the guys that are up here producing. They're major leaguers. This guy's an all-star, and you're sitting there trying to trade them because you can't sign them because you'd be cheap on this guy.
Greg, we appreciate your call, and thank you for making those points. And that's literally why I think that it's a certainty that they will trade him. And I am not saying that you're wrong in thinking that you want them to re-sign him. But it's a near certainty that they're going to trade him, in my opinion, because they don't pay pitchers. The last pitchers and our crack research team of Sears and Espo here determined that the only two pitchers in recent memory, well, three if you go back 20 years, but the only ones in recent memory, and how dare I forget John Danks. What about Danks? I can't believe I forgot the 5-year, $65 million they gave Danks. And then Dallas Keuchel, the Dallas Keuchel that we just talked about last segment, who is now a Brewer, got $55 million from the Sox over three. And Danks was okay. I don't remember how that ended. I don't think it ended very well. I know he was injured.
What about Danks?
Thank you, Chris Ranji somewhere saluting. And Dallas Keuchel was bad. He had a good year, and then he had bad years. So one thing we know about the Reinsdorf White Sox over 42 years or whatever it is, 44 years that he's owned the team, is they don't pay starting pitcher. The third guy, by the way, would be Jose Contreras. But at the time, if you think about it, it wasn't a ton of years and it wasn't a ton of money. It was a big money contract. I want to say it was like 3 and like 40 or something like that. I don't have it in front of me, but you get my gist. It was not like they were paying him $200 million, right? So that is exactly why I think that Crochet will be dealt. And listen, the counterpoint is that is right. You're in a rebuild, or you're certainly if you're not in a full-blown rebuild, you should be, because you're the worst team in baseball right now. And Crochet is going to net you a ton. Let's sneak in another call here before we break. It is our old buddy Ron on the south side here on Hit and Run. Hey, Ron, good morning.
Look here, always good hearing you, Mike. You have to trade him. First of all, the team is not going to even, I'm not talking about being good. This team is not going to be competitive for a couple of years. So if you keep him, really, what are you getting? Same thing with Luis Robert. I had based that on going to the season, kind of projecting when the Sox would be good. Mike, they have no position players. And I know everybody keeps talking about these young arms, but the only way they're going to get some position players from their minor league system is from training. They need to be talking to the Baltimore Orioles, who have the best position players in the minor league system. But yeah, it's just no use keeping his value. Mike, is probably the highest it's ever going to be. It's always the risk of injury. He hasn't pitched this much, but yeah, he has to go. I'm glad Luis Robert is coming around. You have to trade both of them. Thanks, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the call, and thank you for that very effective counterpoint. I agree, and listen, you look at the Major League White Sox roster. Who on this team is going to be in that position the next time the White Sox are contending in the Central? Because it's probably not going to be next year. You could almost guarantee that just based on where this rebuild is headed. And if you don't trade Robert, he is the only guy. Andrew Vaughn, maybe? But he has been underwhelming. He started to come on late. Paul DeJong will be gone at the deadline, most likely. Maybe Corey Lee as a catcher. Andrew Benintendi, by the way, according to the same article, the Sox are shopping Andrew Benintendi. I'm sure there are a lot of phone calls being made there. And I kid, but obviously that's not going to go anywhere, at least not right now. I agree with Ron. You're in a rebuild. You are the worst team in baseball, and you need young star players. However you get them, you need them. And we're starting to see some of that for the Sox on the pitching front. We're not seeing it on the offensive front. Corey Lee has been okay. Lenin Sosa has been okay. Andrew Vaughn has been okay. And, you know, the Eloy Moncada Robert thing, as much logical sense as it made at the time, has not worked. So, to me, and we'll listen, Garrett Crochet, he's all over the place today. He is pitching today. Garrett Crochet is pitching against Colorado as the Sox go for the sweep. And you also have the Inside the Clubhouse interview from yesterday, which we're going to bring back and play for you at 12, because he talks about the trade rumors with Bruce and David. He talks about this, and this was before this report came out, but we will get to that at noon. Let's take one more caller, Sean, before we head to break. David is in Peru and wants to talk Sox and trades here on Hit and Run. Hey, David.
Hey, gang, I love listening to you, so job well done.
Thank you.
And you try to respect all your callers, and I appreciate it. If the White Sox could get Crochet and Robert in a trade, we'd be all excited. There is no reasonable expectation they'll get back the full value of what they're worth. They can wait till this fall. Dylan Cease trade, they didn't get their top prospects. Now, Dylan is having problems now. His ERA has ballooned. But they didn't. If they're going to trade them, get their number one prospects, or tell them to go pick cotton or whatever they want to do.
All right, David, we appreciate the call. I will say this, with the Cease trade, they did get, Drew Thorpe, they got a bunch of prospects. Drew Thorpe, who we've seen, was one of them. The other thing that you have to consider too, David, and listen, Crochet makes no money, so I understand that point of it. But the haul, the what you're getting back versus what you're sending away for a team that has 24 wins here on June 30th, and you're looking for future production and future stardom, really. I mean, that's if you're trading Garrett Crochet at this deadline to the highest bidder, and there's going to be a lot of bidders, you are looking for future stardom out of the guys that you get back. And, you know, not all of them will be future stars, but you are certainly trying to hit a home run with this trade. That is going to be, if moved, the hottest commodity on the trade market, Garrett Crochet. According to Bob Nightingale, it certainly seems like that is happening. I'm less sure that they would move Luis Robert. He is the one marketable player that you have on this roster that you can put, that you would consider the face of the franchise, everyday star player. You could argue that the Sox have one and the Cubs right now don't. We need to take a timeout. When we return, we will talk to that Cubs offense and the lack of that star player, or more, maybe more accurately, the lack of production from those star players. And then, as mentioned, Garrett Crochet on Inside the Clubhouse will bring that one back at noon for you. We got Cubs baseball coming your way with the pregame at 12:35. All of that here on The Score. This is Mike Esposito. I'm in for Matt Spiegel. It's Hit and Run every Sunday morning right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
And so now I wonder, do the Cubs actually become sellers?
I still don't see it, Kevin. We're a month away, as you said. It's not even July yet, and they have the exact same record that they had last year at this time. So last year, what happened? They won 10 of 12 at one point in July, became buyers, acquired Jamer Candelario. This year, could they trade Cody Bellinger if all things go badly? Yeah, they could do that, but they've had rotation injuries, they've had bullpen injuries, they've got 19 one-run losses, the most in the majors. Their offense has been a disappointment. We've seen any number of teams turn around in the last couple of weeks or so. The Astros, the Mets, the Red Sox, the Cardinals. The Cubs are thinking maybe they're next.
Well, we'll find out. Ken, we appreciate it. We'll hear from you a little bit later in the show. Plenty more trade talk.
That's Ken Rosenthal on Fox, one of the most plugged-in MLB reporters in the country. And that was his take on the Cubs and whether or not they become sellers. So Ken Rosenthal right there, basically saying the Cubs are a no. Now, that could change, and we heard Jed Hoyer earlier. We played you some of the Hoyer sound from this week where he said that, you know, now is the time. It's put up or shut up if you're the Cubs. If you're that offense, you need to right the ship, so to speak, as you are six games under 500 entering play today at 39-45, 10.5 games behind the Milwaukee Brewers in the Central Division. And really, the Brewers kind of sort of running away with the division. Still plenty of baseball to be played, but right now there are no close races in the National League. The Phillies are 7 ahead of Atlanta. The Brewers are 6.5 ahead of St. Louis, and the Dodgers are 7.5 ahead of San Diego. So can the Cubs or anyone make it a race in the National League Central? For the Cubs to do that, and you heard Ken Rosenthal refer to this during his answer there on the Fox programming that we played from entering the segment, the Cubs are going to have to pull a 2023, much like they did last year. If you recall, in early June, the Cubs were out in San Francisco after losing that series. They were 10 games under 500. I want to say it was June 7th or 8th of last year. And they went on a several-month heater in which they turned themselves into not only not a seller at the deadline, but a buyer. You heard Ken reference the Jamer Candelario thing, which worked out, and then they had a great August, and they were a playoff team. They choked away the playoff berth at the end of the season because they couldn't hold leads again. But this was a team that was 10 under, and then all of a sudden was a buyer, and then all of a sudden was a, you know, solidly a wild card team. And then it was a team that all of a sudden couldn't hold the lead and got passed in September by the Marlins and by the eventual National League champion, Arizona Diamondbacks. So from Ken's reporting, he's telling you that the Cubs feel that they are still in this, that they have the talent. They've had all these various things go wrong, including the one-run games, which we mentioned earlier this season. If you can, or earlier this program, I should say, if you convert half of those one-run games this season from losses to wins, the Cubs would be right up there with the Brewers. Now, you can't do that. That's not how it works. Having a good bullpen is a big part of that. The Cubs have not had that all season. Even when healthy, Adbert Alzolay blew, I want to say, five saves in April before he got hurt. It was a lot. And those are games they should have won. You had a game on Monday, and Sean, I can't believe it's taken us almost 3 hours to mention the walk-off walk, but one for the Cubs pantheon. Monday night in San Francisco, the Cubs enter the ninth with a 4-2 lead, and they lose 5-4 on something that you don't see every day. And Drew Smyly was the pitcher of the moment there, the pitcher of record, and the guy that gave up that walk-off walk. I can't recall a walk-off walk in recent vintage, but the Cubs managed to give up three runs, including the walk-off walk, to lose that game Monday in San Francisco. I'm sure that was the game when a lot of Cubs fans threw their proverbial TVs off their balconies or cashed in their chips on the season.
Bases loaded, two down, bottom of the ninth inning. And the 3-1 pitch, ball four. The Cubs have lost the ballgame. The Giants rally for three in the ninth inning. And they have beaten the Cubs by a score of 5-4.
Pat Hughes with the lowlights right here on the Cubs radio network and on 670 Score. The intentional walk to set up the walk-off walk. You can't draw it up any worse than that, folks. That was a bad one. That was a disheartening one because you most likely stayed up till almost midnight to watch that ending. And Sean is nodding his head vigorously, as am I, because we both were there suffering along with you and Cubs fans nationwide. But as we just heard from Ken Rosenthal, the Cubs internally think that they are still in this. They are 6 under .500. They are 10.5 back, but they've got a month. You basically heard Jed say this in the sound we played. They've got a month to right the ship. If you have a nice month, let's say you play a 15-10, 16-10, however many games they have, you're right back at .500. You know that'll put you in the wild card race. You know that'll keep you squarely in the divisional race. They would not sell. They would probably maybe small buy or maybe big buy. Who the heck knows, right? But have a 10-15 month, and then you're 11 under .500, and then I'm going to guess you're selling, and then you would be one of the biggest disappointments certainly in baseball this year if that were to happen. But the flip side is also still possible. Hour three complete here on Hit and Run. Hour four coming up next as we lead you up to Cubs baseball. We will start it with a great interview with the biggest trade chip at the deadline, Garrett Crochet. And Bob Nightingale already out this morning saying that Crochet is likely to be traded by the White Sox. Garrett was on with Inside the Clubhouse yesterday with Bruce and David. We will listen to that. Next, as we lead you into Cubs Brewers, it's Hit and Run. Espo in for Spiegs here on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.